And fourthly, the fourth factor or fourth reason for the disappearance of Buddhism from India, partial absorption of Buddhism by Hinduism. Now, we may say that really there's no such thing as Hinduism. Hinduism is not a religion in the sense that Buddhism is, if one can even call Buddhism itself a religion. Hinduism has no one single founder. We may say that it's the sum total of the cultural and religious beliefs and practices of the Indian people from prehistoric times right down to the present day. Now, the Buddha, Gautama the Buddha, the founder of Buddhism, lived and taught in a Hindu environment. He was a new man appearing among the old men. That is to say, until the appearance of more new men as a result of his own teaching. Now, by virtue of his enlightenment, by virtue of the fact that he was the Buddha, the enlightened one, by virtue of the fact that his enlightenment was not just wisdom, but was also compassion, he had something to communicate, something to tell, some message, if you like, something that he wanted to share with humanity, share with the people around him. But how was he to communicate this? How was he to put it across to them? Through what medium? Obviously, even though his experience, his enlightenment experience, his transcendental experience, the experience of reality was unprecedented, was new, was unique, he still had to use the old language as soon as he opened his mouth to speak. Not only the old language in the merely linguistic sense, but in the sense of language of thoughts, language of ideas, language of concepts, of attitudes. In other words, to put it simply, Buddhism has to speak the language of Hinduism. And it's important to understand this. Very much of what we think of as Buddhist is only Hindu or is only Indian and has in fact nothing to do with Buddhism. You've all encountered these long lists of terms, doctrinal terms, when you've been reading Buddhist scriptures, whether in Pali or Sanskrit or translations. Again and again and again you come across long lists of terms. The five of this, the eight of something else, the 24 of something else, the 52 of something else, the 89 of something else. Sometimes Buddhist literature seems to consist of these lists and lists of lists and lists of lists of lists. And in this way, many canonical scriptures are built up. They're great massive lists. One list piled on top of another, just like Pelion on Ossa, as they say. And one might think, well, this is Buddhism. This is characteristic of Buddhism. This is just how Buddhism is. Buddhism is lists. It's an essential part of Buddhism. This is the way Buddhism looks at things. It sees everything as lists. Lists on earth, lists in heaven, lists everywhere. But this has got nothing at all to do with Buddhism. Nothing at all to do with the Buddha's enlightenment experience. This is the Indian mind at work. Not a transcendental mind, a lower mind, a conditioned mind. The Indian mind at work. The Indian mind loves tabulation, so the Indian mind got busy also on Buddhism. And it was a useful way of remembering things. But we think that this is Buddhism. But here again, it's Buddhism speaking the language of Hinduism. In the same way, much of what we think of as Zen, this wonderful word Zen, has got nothing to do with Zen whatever. A certain way of sitting, cushion, certain shape, size, particular way of chanting, this has got nothing to do with Zen at all. This is all merely Japanese. Or we might even come nearer home and we might say, well, much of what we think of as Christianity is nothing to do with Christianity at all, in the sense of the actual teaching of Christ. It's either Mediterranean paganism or Roman imperialism. Nothing to do with Christianity. Now, when Buddhism uses the language of Hinduism, Hinduism itself changes. It's very important to notice this. Hinduism itself changes. Just as when a great poetic genius like Shakespeare uses the English language, the English language itself is permanently changed, permanently enriched. How is it that in modern English we can interchange all the parts of speech? This is due mainly to Shakespeare. It was Shakespeare who did this on a grand scale. And in this way, he made the English language more elastic and more expressive than it ever had been before. So in the same way, when Buddhism speaks the language of Hinduism, as it were, Hinduism itself is changed. In other words, the appearance of Buddhism, the appearance of the Buddha and his teaching in the midst of Hinduism profoundly influenced, profoundly modified Hinduism itself. In fact, we may say, transformed it. Hinduism as we know it today is not the old Vedic Hinduism of the time of the Buddha. Hinduism as we know it today is a quite different thing, and it developed largely as a result of the stimulus given to it by Buddhism over 1500 years. This is very well illustrated by the history of Indian logic. This is rather the classic case because it's so clear. Indian logic, Hindu logic, was a very primitive affair originally, and along came the Buddhist logicians and criticized it. Then the Hindu logicians responded. They criticized the Buddhist criticism, and this went on for 1,000 years, a ding-dong battle between rival schools of logicians, Hindu and Buddhist, right down to the time of the disappearance of Buddhism from India. And the battle continues in Tibet. It continues even as between Buddhist logicians and Marxist logicians. It goes on right down through the present time. So what happened in the field of logic? This ding-dong battle, as it were, between the Hindu and the Buddhist schools, the one sharpening and refining the other and provoking it, as it were, to higher and higher flights. This happened in practically all other fields as well. And of course, the whole process was sharpened by Brahminical rivalry. And eventually, the Brahmins, when they saw which way the wind was blowing, they started deliberately borrowing from Buddhism. And it's for this reason that we speak of the partial absorption of Buddhism by Hinduism, as more and more material was taken over by Hinduism from Buddhism. It's only a partial absorption because the real spirit of Buddhism was not, indeed could not be, assimilated. The caste system, with all its inequalities, with all its injustices, remained intact, and of course, that supremely important consideration, the supremacy of the Brahmins was ensured. Now, we can see very well how the position now stands. Buddhism had become centralized in the large monasteries. It was thus dependent on the support of a dwindling number of Buddhist kings. It was cut off from the lay community, and the lay community itself was increasingly under the influence of the Brahmins, and the Brahmins had succeeded in borrowing more and more from Buddhism. So it's obvious that the Buddhists in India were heading for trouble. And of course, the trouble came. And it came with